The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Greetings everybody, and thanks so much for joining me for today's episode of Climate Matters. I'm Lindsay Wood from climate strategy company Resilience Limited, and Climate Matters is brought to you by Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. Well, today I'm pleased to bring you the third interview that we did after the COP30 gathering in Brazil with Daniela Ramirez. This is, again, a different one. The first one, you may remember, Daniela ran through the structure of COP and the different ways it was themed and the nature of the whole layout and her role. And then the second of these interviews was on very big and contentious things like the fossil fuel lobby and the possibility of nuclear power and whether there was a place for carbon capture and storage. This time she's coming a bit closer to home or to more familiar themes. She will be talking about the New Zealand delegation and about the what is known as the Aboriginal community, that is the indigenous communities and ethnic input, including some good things to say about the young Maori delegation. She will talk about local government in this context, and there is a bit there about how the next COP, COP31, the venue for that was chosen. I should actually give you a little forewarning that towards the end of the interview, we started to have trouble with the Zoom connection we were recording on. So apologies if a little bit of the sound becomes a little bit garbled or a little bit stuttery. And so I do hope you enjoy this with Daniela Ramirez. So Daniela, you mentioned before the New Zealand delegation and how open they were and how good they were to deal with. Can you tell us a little bit more about how the delegation was made up and the sort of ways you managed to interact with them?
Sure. So they were coming from MFE, and I knew another person from MPI. They were lovely, super busy. We interact with them in the New Zealand brief. They were doing one brief, half an hour every day, and you could ask whatever you want to hear about New Zealand position or the discussions, how they were evolving. They were very grateful for us to be there in the second week. And that was a better time to challenge him with more questions. There were many people interested to ask much more stronger questions. But the team, I could see that the team was doing their best.
Very good. Well, that was good to hear that they were so open and receptive to what you were saying. Moving on, you've mentioned, you know, there are themes that go through COPs, aren't there, like agriculture and finance and so on. Can you tell us a little bit about what the key themes were and how they emerged or how you encountered them in COP?
So the ones that I attend, because as I said, you have to choose which one you could go.
Yes,
I found the finance mechanisms, that was one full day, probably 2 days, or another one was about local government, where many local governments from different countries were showcasing their project. Another one was around agriculture, transport, energy, and heaps around adaptation and natural-based solutions. So that was okay. Very trendy topic that, and also a one that I didn't think that I was going to see there. They even had a pavilion, is carbon dioxide removal. Not just forest. We usually tend to think removal, okay, it's a forest, but they had a huge amount of other techniques that they were talking, including biochar or stones that they use. It's many, many others that they were trying to promote as a way to say, let's do mitigation, let's reduce emissions, but at the same time, you also need all these other techniques. So all those topics were discussed along the days, the 2 weeks. And after the fire, everything was closed and all the pavilions closed, so there was no more talks. So thanks God that wasn't the last 2 days left. But yeah, the other topics were, yeah, you name it, is whatever you could think of, it was there offered by the one that I couldn't attend that I wish I could was Ukraine, was effects of climate change and the war.
When you can't attend, Daniela, is there a way of you accessing information afterwards? Do they stream anything or?
Nothing. And that's interesting
Oh,
too,
that's a loss.
because there was not an agenda. There was not an agenda either. So there is an agenda for the United Nations special events. So for those, you have an agenda, you can go and attend and organize your day. But all the talks in the pavilions, you have to just go walk around and choose the one that you think and scan your QR code and see the agenda of the day and hope that you are not missing another good one over there in the corner. That's the part that I thought that was very confusing, because there was no way to see everything what was happening. You had to understand which pavilion you were interested and then see the program that they had for the week. Methane was another topic that I thought that was interesting. They had just one day talking about methane projects in different pavilions. The Chinese were talking about the AI and how that is related with the climate. Singapore was all about technology. Yeah, it's each country was showcasing whatever they did the best.
Oh, that's interesting. So the themes came about not so much by the organizers saying we're going to have an agriculture theme or an AI theme. It was more about the individual countries that were interested in that promoting it. Is that how it worked?
I believe the theme was a United Nations plan, but each pavilion was providing different talks about that particular topic. The topics in the first week were more technical because all the technical people was there, and then in the
Yes,
second
you.
week they used all the ministers that were there. They were given just high level views, and that was more yeah, like a minister overview of the targets. Some of them were using that opportunity to announce a particular plan or reduction target or commitment. So it's all well prepared to use the COP as a showcase opportunity for that particular country.
Shall we move on then? Because one of the things that struck you said, was the presence of local communities, Aboriginal people, and so on. And can you perhaps give us a picture of how that manifested itself?
Yes. So they were all around different areas, the blue zone, the accredited one, and the green zone in both. So you will see entire families dressed as the Aboriginal. So and they were much better suit than we were, because it was so hot inside and they were just with the bottom part and all painted, body painted. The kids were running around. It was beautiful to watch.
When you said in the blue zone and the green zone, does that mean the ones in the blue zone, I'm imagining, are official delegations,
Yes.
and the ones in the
Yes.
green zone are cultural ones, if you like? Is that right?
Probably lost the ones of from the green zone. They were local tribes coming from somewhere in the Amazon. Remember that Belen is very close to the Amazon area. So I saw one day one full bus. It was just so random to watch, like an electric bus, all full of Aboriginals from Brazil, all dressed up and painted and with kids. I'm like, whoa,
Oh,
that just didn't have
amazing.
time to record, but they were getting there in mass, And I wasn't sure which type of accreditation the ones in the blue zone were, but they seemed to be very well represented. And again, this is my first COP, so I couldn't compare, but by talking with people that have been in different COPs, it seems that this is the time where the Aboriginal or the Indigenous communities were very well represented. And then you can see all the Latin American Aboriginals or natives communities as well. All of them dress, they had different topics each day. So one day was about Indigenous communities. So that was the day that was different talks in different pavilions. And then I
Oh,
will have to
brilliant.
say that the Maori group, they were the most popular ones because the music and the dance
Really?
and the haka. Oh yeah, they were every time that they were doing the haka, I could feel like people in other pavilions were running, just rushing to see what
Really?
was going on, and they were taking photos and videos.
It's good to
They were
hear,
very
but
popular.
that's I obviously I'm glad to hear that, but that's a surprise given all the other cultural things going on. Good, well done them. That's good.
I know. The
Oh,
youth,
wow.
they had the youth organization, I can't remember the name right now, but they came over and they did a couple of performances in the Moana Pavilion. So New Zealand didn't have a standard and sorry, a pavilion, but we used the Moana Pacific Pavilion as a place to gather all the New
Right.
Zealanders.
So who ran the Moana Pavilion then, Daniela? Was it a
It was a
under
Pacific Island.
a... Okay, thank you. That's interesting to think that the Pacific Islands Pavilion is hosting New Zealand instead of the other way around.
It seems that they receive fundings or support from New Zealand and Australia to run the
Yeah, that's
pavilion.
good.
And I understand also that it's very expensive to have a pavilion there. It's not a cheap thing to have. And again, the difference that I saw in the pavilions from the oil and gas producers that were like huge with LEDs and lights and goodies and food. And then you could see the ones that NGOs, like very little, just with a couple of people there. You can totally see the difference. Who is the oil producer there with money and who is not?
It sounds a bit obscene to me, Daniela, the
Yes.
difference.
I would like to explore more the way that the finance is done for other local governments. It seems that all local governments around the world, they do have more support from philanthropic organizations, and these organizations were also willing to work with developing countries and especially with local governments. So there was a discussion about this funding not getting directly to communities, for example. Some of these organizations were willing to create that opportunity to provide direct fundings to locals or to community or to community-led initiatives. So that's something that I put in my list to investigate more. I thought that was something that would be very useful in Nelson.
Yes, so did I understand you correctly that sometimes these NGOs provide funding to councils? Is that, did I hear you correctly?
Yes, that's
Wow,
correct.
that's interesting. Oh, that's a surprise. I hadn't imagined it would work like that, so that's very interesting. Oh, maybe shall we use that as a little segue into the selection process for the next COP, and then
Sure.
we'll come back to some other issues. But you'd explained that Turkey and Australia, I think Adelaide particularly, were the two main contenders. So can you explain a little bit about how they had to go about bidding and what unfolded?
It was all behind closed doors. So we just knew, sometimes you knew more from the media around than being itself in the place. I just know that if they didn't reach to an agreement, The COP31 was going to be held in Germany, in Bonn. So, Turkey, I understood that Turkey was willing to risk getting nothing at all before giving up the country. And Australia was like, well, I would rather be the president of the COP, and the COP is being held in Turkey, than not get nothing at all. So I think that's what happened. And it was very
That's a
interesting because the pavilions were together. So you could see that Australia were offering coffee, and then the other ones were offering sweets. And then it was funny to watch.
But in a way, that's another case of what you're saying about negotiation and what you're prepared to give up, isn't it?
That's correct. And from my understanding, they also got a pre-COP event in the Pacific Island. Not sure about the location yet, but part of the negotiation, from my understanding, is that a pre-COP will be held in the Pacific Islands, and that's a way for us to demonstrate, like in our region, to demonstrate the effects of the climate change in our region, but also to attract fundings, which is one of the main reasons why they wanted to get the COP in our region.
Because when we talked last time, you had met the mayor of Adelaide, and you'd come
Yes.
away with the feeling that it was mainly a commercial exercise for them. But then you emailed me and said, actually, they're also talking about the importance of the looking after the Pacific and things. So.
And I hadn't realized at that time that that's very key, because in today's COP, I could see so many organizations that provide funding that they had the space with the Brazilian organizations to make deals, in the sense that, okay, you have a project and initiatives, I'm happy to fund it or to provide grants. And that space and that negotiation can only be done in person. I could see that that's I could see the benefit of having a COP in a region, because all these organizations, I don't know, the World Bank, they go to the place, they see what's going on, they are presented with the initiatives and this opportunity for them to fund them. So, yeah,
Wow,
it's a
that's
pity, but hopefully we will get something with Australia being related anyway.
well, watch this space. Oh, thank
Exactly.
you for that. Well, Danielle, I think I have to let you go. You've been wonderful as a guest. Thank you. And I so look forward to having a catch up with you when you get back here. So I wish you a good coming down and decompression after COP30,
Thank you very
and
much.
also getting back to your family in Chile. And of course, as
Yes,
I've
that's
said, I
correct.
look forward to catching up with you when you're back here.
Thank you so much, Lindsay. See you back at home.
So that brings us to the end of the third interview of three very different interviews. Gosh, what wonderful insights Daniela gave us into the machinations and workings of COP30. So anyway, I do hope you enjoyed them and got as much out of them as I did. It was really great. I do hope I have your company again next week. Now, as you know, Climate Matters is brought to you by Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. Fresh FM broadcasts in Blenheim on 88.9, to the Nelson CBD on 107.2, to Eastern Golden Bay on 95.0, and across the Nelson Tasman region on 104.8. It's also streamed to the planet on freshfm.co.nz, and podcasts of Climate Matters and other locally produced shows are available through freshfm.co.nz. Thanks again for your company. I look forward to it again next week. And of course, as always, kia kaha for the climate.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community Access Media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.